tried to bring them out. Why tried to? I don't have to see anything. The leader says, stay cool, we're bringing you the one side. Stay cool, we're in a good position.
Good work, Mark. The Vettel is in this lap. You are next.
Hamilton 3.5, 3.5.
Okay, I don't want to know.
Hello and welcome to the GP Cast, giving you the latest reaction to all the action and talking points which dominate the world of Formula One. Coming up tonight, we review the Canadian Grand Prix, a race which saw Lewis Hamilton take control of the World Drivers Championship. And as tyres took central stage in Montreal, we asked whether the rubber itself should be made more edgier to improve the quality of motor racing. And, naughty naughty finger wagging, a panellist shed light on Michael Schumacher's latest heavy-handed defensive driving and asked whether he got off lightly. So, we've been on a bit of a gap. I hope you didn't miss us too much, but if you did, I hope to change that. And I'll make it up to you by revealing our panel tonight. Gaz, joining in, Paul Douglas. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
Evening.
So, gentlemen, let's get stuck right into the Canadian Grand Prix weekend itself. And obviously, Formula One returned to the circuit, Gilles Villeneuve, after a one-year absence from the calendar. And obviously, from the onset, we had drama. First, I'd like to ask you to give your reaction to F1's return to Canada.
It was a great race. Great to be back in North America.
This is one track that never shows up a dull race. It was nice to have a race without any safety cars for a change.
Yeah, I love this circuit. So I was really happy to be back in it during a cracking race.
Well, as for mentioned, we had drama from the onset when the drivers experienced severe graining during practice while running Bridgestone's option tyre, obviously the super soft compound for this weekend. And also with the additional overnight rain washing away any rubber that had been laid, Montreal's notoriously bad surface caused some problems for the teams. This resulted in the entrants being forced to take quite a gamble in what tyre they would use if they were able to get into the final segment of qualifying. And so what we did see, obviously, as a result of this, was the new rule for this season whereby the tyre you qualified on, you would have to start the race, coming to fruition. So what caused this to happen? Was it simply the unique circumstances surrounding Montreal? Or do you think there was some other issue?
I think this is probably mainly down to all the rubber being washed away. And then, of course, they've resurfaced quite a lot of the parts in Montreal because the track didn't break up like I'd been doing in previous years either.
Well, that's very true.
Sorry. I don't know that this is actually a problem because, as I understood it, the whole point of the tyre rules this year was supposed to be that there was massive degradation on the prime. And that's exactly what's happened here, which we've not been getting elsewhere. We've seen people do half the race on the prime in the past. The option. We're supposed to have massive degradation on the option, and we haven't had that yet.
Even though there was severe problems during the race, drivers still managed to run a number of laps on both sets of tyres, even though obviously they were in the worst condition we'd seen all year. So that does say something about the reliability of the Bridgestone rubber. But I'd also put to you that Bridgestone as a sole tyre supplier, although that is part of the rules, they have an image to uphold. So it's not good for them to make the tyres looking like they're going to fall to bits all the time. So maybe that's the reason why. I think as well, Montreal sits quite unique. Obviously, the track is unused for most of the year, and it has very harsh winters there, so it is always subjected to break up. And although they did try to resurface certain parts, didn't work entirely with the rain washing any rubber that was laid, so it took a while for the cars to be able to get up to speed and for the teams to dial into the circuit.
Yeah, I think it was a mixture of the fact that it rained and there was a gap in the tyres. You know, I don't put it this way, in Valencia, it's similar to Canada. The fact it's not used as much, like Silverstone's used, constantly throughout the year. So if there's a gap between the tyres in Valencia, we might get a similar situation, but it won't be nearly as bad as Canada.
Yeah, that's true. And
plus yours get a procession in Valencia.
It's also a little bit warmer as well, and the track surface itself is a bit newer, so you'd expect it to be a little bit better.
Yeah.
From gauging your opinion, I'm guessing the three of you would say that it was good for the sport and you'd like to see such a thing happening again.
Yeah, I can understand Bridgestone's point of view, it being, obviously detrimental to the advertising campaign. You know, look at Bridgestone's tyres, they can't even last 10 laps, That's what someone's going to think. But at the end of the day...
I don't buy that crap. Nobody's...
No, like I don't either. I mean, Bridgestone, I wouldn't buy a tyre anyway because F1 uses it.
And frankly, if the single tyre manufacturer is going to make it so that we don't have the massive degradation on the prime that the rules clearly require us to have in order for them to make any sense, we should have more than one tyre manufacturer.
And plus, it's not like you're going to put one of the Bridgestone Prime tyres on your road car either.
Well, I don't know if anybody...
I'm sure. I keep saying prime when I mean option.
It's easy to get them confused, I suppose. I don't know.
Just call them hot, hard, and soft tires. Like,
but that's you can't do that because there's the hard and the soft in the range.
Yes, there's four range tires. The BBC F1 forum, for anyone who's seen it, any of our listeners would have noticed that they spoke to Bridgestone's director of motorsport, and he said that he expects a similar situation to not emerge until Hockenheim, so we may have to wait until Hockenheim before we have such a variation in terms of the tyres. But it was good, and obviously McLaren decided to gamble on running the super soft option in Q3, and this paid off with Hamilton taking pole in his final last gasp effort. Mm. And that was 3 out of 3 for the Brit, when you think about it.
It was truly a very, very good lap.
It was, but sadly Lewis had to stop on his way back to the pits as McLaren warned him that he would not have enough fuel to pass the FIA's stringent tests. Consequently, this forced Hamilton to push his car down the back straight, and obviously it sent the crowd into raptures. It was a great moment, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really good for the sport. It showed real, scout the car, sat the car for a bit, and pushed the car a bit,
Yeah, really, and it was a crowd-pleasing act, but later the FIA took a dim view on it, and they slapped the reprimand on Hamilton, and they fined him $10,000. So where are the FIA?
To be fair to the FIA, they didn't fine Hamilton $10,000 for pushing his car down the back straight. They fined McLaren $10,000 for failing to get their car back to Parc Fermé.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, the amount of sponsorship they got from that, they're not going to be asked. So,
Where are the FIA right?
Doesn't happen a lot. Go on, sorry, mate.
Where are the FIA right to play party papers? Or is this another example of political correctness gone mad in Formula 1?
No, I don't
think if Max Mosley was still there, it would have been 10-place grid drop and then probably a 10-second penalty, time penalty added on at the end of the race.
I don't think you can criticise the FIA for being party poopers when all they did was hand out a £10,000 penalty.
Yeah, I was expecting pole to be taken off him to punish you, but at the end of the day, it's a small fine, kind of like slap the wrist, don't do that again, because you're the first people to do it, don't do it again, or else you will get a bigger penalty. They clarified the rule now, it's fair enough. There's no rule against it, technically.
Yeah,
you know?
It's not like they were punished for the Hamilton's antics on the track. Like I said, they were punished because they couldn't get the car back. And
If it was a Spaniard, they'd be in they'd be in pretty big trouble.
Well, I only ask the question. I want to give a certain point of view. It's part of the Grand Prix cast, obviously, to argue against it if they'd be.
The thing is,
on Friday and Sunday morning, Charlie Whiting issued a declaration to the team saying that such an issue would not be allowed to happen again, and if it did, the FIA would take a harsher line on it.
Yeah, so it's fair enough, because otherwise you're going to get teams doing it all the time, running the cars super light and just pushing them back to pits. I've done a lap now.
Red
across
Bull
the line.
Do it every race.
Yeah.
Won't surprise me.
I think the biggest story though is the fact that it's a Red Bull for a change, not on pole. And it was a
I feel that we should have them blower things you have at children's birthday parties, you know, that make the noises and stuff. Because no disrespect to Red Bull, but it was refreshing to see McLaren take pole position, or a different team, should I say, taking pole position for the first time this year. It was a huge relief, given the pace of the Red Bulls in other qualifying sessions this year. So let's move on to the race, and obviously the different tyre strategies elected by the teams led to an action-packed Grand Prix. It really was edge-in-your-seat stuff, I would say. And obviously Lewis Hamilton came out and top. How impressed were you of Hamilton's drive, and Button's for that matter, who obviously followed his teammate to record the second successive 1-2 for McLaren this season? Meanwhile, Red Bull's gamble to start in the medium compound did not pay off, and Mark Webber, who led the race for a large part, was not able to make such a significant enough advantage to come out for the second stop in the lead. Obviously, Sebastian Vettel also had issues, I think, with his gearbox. So do you think that the pendulum has now swung in terms of the title battle? Do you think it's swung in McLaren's favour? Red Bull will be able to get it back, or do you think it's going to swing to and fro for the rest of the year? And also, you know, it's a panic and frustration within the Red Bull team. Obviously, Christian Horner and Sebastian Vettel had a little bit of a ding-dong over the radio during the race.
I think Vettel's just being really pathetic. I mean, he just cannot overtake. He's the Matt Neal of F1 now, but he can't overtake without crashing into somebody. And his radio saying, "Do I need to overtake someone?" Yes, you
do. But Matt Neal, people's champion.
Yes, and he's going to be a three-time BTC champion at the end of the year.
I think at the end of the day, if you look at someone like Lewis Hamilton, who won that race primarily by overtaking most of the top four twice, in some cases, you know, he just basically, he just used every advantage he had. You know, he'd use a back marker, get that round, and use the hairpin. He needed to overtook two people again at the hairpin, which would have been a fantastic if he pulled that move off. You know, any opportunity you give him, it's like dangling a piece of meat in front of a lion, he's going to rip your face off to get it. You know, if you put a slow car in front of Alonso and Lewis thinks, opportunity, he'll take it. And Jensen did exactly the same thing. They both used their opportunities there, and he got past Alonso. Alonso should have planned it better.
Alonso in a few seconds, just to talk about my original question, obviously.
Can we talk about Webber, whilst we're on the subject of Red Bull? Because
yes, definitely.
His strategy was appalling. I mean, if I was a Mark Webber fan, if there was a Mark Webber fan here, I would not blame them for thinking Red Bull had deliberately stuffed Mark Webber's strategy to get him behind Vettel, because there was no way in hell at any point in the middle stint Mark Webber was going to come out ahead of Vettel. It was a terrible strategy.
Yeah, just leave him out as long as we could. I mean, also, there was a lot of controversy. Well, it was suggested. Even Martin Brundle picked up on it. You know, he said obviously it wasn't true, but he did say, you know, I don't think they've given him a gearbox change just to put him behind Vettel. But the fact of the matter is, you know, he started well behind Vettel and finished right behind him. So at the end of the day, Webber did better than Vettel that race. I mean, Vettel really, by rights.
Well, Vettel himself, you know, you have to argue, had an issue during the race, so
he had a problem with his balls, I think.
Vettel can't overtake with Toffee. He got on the radio and said during the race to throw people, I said, oh, he's going to, I bet, watch him, you know, when Horner said to him, you'll have to overtake for the lead, you know, and Vettel, I said, watch him ask now, how do I do, am I supposed to do that? And sure enough, two laps later, he actually said, how am I supposed to do that? What kind of fucking racing driver is he? If he can't actually fathom, he's got to put his car alongside another driver and just push the advantage home and overtake them. He can't overtake for Toffee.
Well,
he was complaining that, to Horner that he'd been asked to overtake whilst he was also apparently nursing a problem, although I don't know.
Every time Vettel they give him problems.
But then later in the race, having yelled at Horner for daring to tell him to try and overtake, he then goes, can I try for the fastest lap?
Yeah.
So clearly He wasn't asking how he was supposed to overtake because the car was not up to stuff. Because he should have clearly known he wouldn't be able to do the fastest lap. You can't have it both ways, Sebastian.
You don't get points for the fastest lap. It's not champ car.
Yeah.
Although there might be turmoil in the Red Bull camp.
He's obviously not thinking like a champion, though. Because a champion would be thinking, right, I need to just be careful and I'll bring the car home. But instead he goes, can I do a media lap just for fun, you know, lol guys, it would be funny. And an engineer absolutely went to skits at him, you know.
Rocky's just like, don't even think about it.
And that was literally, are you a f***ing idiot? Kind of, you know, are you an idiot?
Yeah. He did not sound impressed at all. I think probably there was more that Sebastian had been saying throughout the race, and Rocky was just getting sick of him at that point.
Yeah. Well, honestly, have you noticed though? Obviously, there was a lot in 2008. There was a lot of people, and 2007, there was a lot of people that went off lose rather quickly. But it seems to have swung now to Vettel, and the mass majority of people just do not like Vettel. I mean, it's subtle.
It doesn't help
his case that people like the BBC and Bernie Eccleston are so quick to fellate him.
Yeah.
And they go on about how awesome he is. And they also say he's very nice and stuff. But he just comes across to the public as an arrogant twat.
Yeah, he comes across to Suttle. What do you say to Suttle? God doesn't like him. I know Suttle doesn't like him. Because I think he said something to Suttle. I can't remember what he said now. But he had a dig at Suttle about something. And Suttle just said, yeah, he thinks he's a superstar. He's an arrogant, you know, in other words, an arrogant little so-and-so. You know, so I don't think Suttle likes him. And he said, Glock said, yeah, well, whatever. You know, they do not, they're both, those two German fellows. Nico doesn't like him either, I don't think.
Which one?
Right, well, let's not turn this into, let's say, hull abuse at Sebastian Vettel. You can do that in your time.
I do.
Turmoil or no turmoil in Red Bull, the Milton Keynes outfit is still going to be a challenger for this championship. And obviously, Hamilton and Button have made some comments in the last few days saying that that McLaren need to be wary of Red Bull. So you asked originally where the pendulum swung. Obviously, it's in McLaren's favour. Do you think it's going to be to and fro for the rest of the year?
Valencia will be good for McLaren.
It was a shocker for Red Bull last year.
McLaren has a new car for Silverstone. Red Bull theoretically suits Silverstone, but...
Yeah,
there's nothing to suggest the McLaren doesn't.
I think that's going to be quite up in the air because some teams will be going for a low, might probably try a low drag setup for Silverstone with the new national straight section.
The RW80 should advantage McLaren down the straights, and there are some long ass straights at Silverstone now.
Well, the thing is with Silverstone, it depends on. I mean, Whitmarsh said basically it's going to be a B-spec 25 for McLaren. Silverstone. Now, it could be an amazing new car with all the nice new features, the Red Bull, you know, and it takes the or it could be a bit of a flop. So it really depends on the speed spec McLaren. Hockenheim Ring, you know, again, there's a couple of decent straights on it, so the F-Duck could come into play. Hungaroring, though, there's not that many straights on it, so you're gonna have real difficulty, I expect.
Well, there's the massive home straight.
Yeah,
that's not you know, just look at that though. You know, McLaren's victory in Canada at the weekend wasn't entirely just down to the F-duct. I mean, there was a lot of other reasons, but obviously we'll come back to that later on, and we'll talk about the tracks further down the line. I would like to talk about another man who returned to form, and that was Fernando Alonso, who could well have won the Canadian Grand Prix had he managed his passage through the traffic better. Ferrari themselves, we're talking about upgrades from McLaren, Ferrari themselves are planning to implement a new upgrade in Valencia, including a new exhaust system, which is very similar to that of Red Bull, apparently. Therefore, would it be too early to write off the Scuderia's title challenge?
If Ferrari's update works in Valencia, and they've got the softer tyres as well, they're gonna be a real threat. You might even get them, you know, Ferrari, Alonso, followed by followed by Lewis and Jensen, I reckon.
Ewan, I refer you to Eddie Jordan's response to a similar question. Fernando Alonso can reassert himself into the Drivers' Championship, but there is absolutely no hope in hell of Ferrari winning the Constructors' Championship because, as the race in Canada demonstrated, Massa is rubbish.
It's not rubbish.
I'm not mincing words about this anymore. Massa is not very good.
Massa's good, but he's got some issues with the tyres at the moment.
No, I don't.
He said himself, he's not lying.
I think he needs his visor.
I'm sorry, you racing driver excuse, you're
No, 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 Massa won't lie.
It's a racing driver.
Massa's like, he's like,
racing driver excuse.
Yeah, I know.
I would have you know that when they made the switch from Michelin to the single tyre supplier in 2007, Alonso and Raikkonen had significant problems with the tyres at the time. And I did read an interesting article from Mark Hughes who said that if Juan Pablo Montoya, given his style of driving, he was never really able to adapt his style well to the last batch of Michelin tyres. He was under the impression that Montoya might have done significantly better had he been with Alonso in 2007. Of course, we will never know. I know that Kubica has had to slightly change his style as well. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, you're welcome and you're open to have criticisms of Massa, but I would say there is an element of truth maybe in the tyres there. But I'm not saying that's the sole reason, because he did crash into Liuzzi. He did set some very fast times when he came out of the pits. I suppose he had a clear track then, so he was able to do
a lot less body work as well.
Yeah.
End of the day, the tyres excuse does not play for Massa in the way it kind of does for Schumacher. The tyres this year are not that different. Nobody else is having a problem.
But Massa won't lie. It's Felipe, baby. Now, seriously, I mean, I think Massa is not Alonso. And you put a driver like Alonso in the car, and Massa's going to beat him perhaps once, and Alonso's going to go, yeah, it's not going to happen again, mate. And then
It says enough, doesn't it, when usually with a driver retained, it gives them a bit of confidence, and they don't feel as uneasy. And, you know, usually they translate that onto the track. But the fact that he's been kept for 2 years and he has still not been able to push on as much.
I'm surprised they retained him so early, to be honest with you.
Well, that's another issue for another podcast over the political management over in Maranello. We'll keep tight lips on that for now. One man who seems to be slipping further away at the top of the driver's standings, and you could argue that he wasn't going to win it anyways, but you never know, is Michael Schumacher, who came under fire, obviously, in Canada after the Canadian Grand Prix.
Oh, you mean Nico Rosberg's water carrier?
for some of his driving. Schumacher first collided with Robert Kubica when the pole attempted to pass him. And then later on, badly worn tyres. He controversially blocked Felipe Massa, knocking the Brazilian's front wing off. You know that Paul has his views on Massa, but we'll come back to that in a second. And then finally, he was very heavily handed with the Force India drivers. So, all of this went unpunished by the stewards, but it did not stop him facing a barrage of criticism from members of the media. Obviously, Martin Brundle. We act like the bias, we do get the British coverage over here, but he certainly was one of those who was outspoken about him. So, should he have got off scot-free?
No. I mean,
hell no.
Basically, Michael Schumacher in that race was like a bear with an anger, with a sword head, like a bullet in a china shop. He just basically hit everybody that came near him. You try to overtake me, ram, off the track you go. You know, he just punted, Massa, his best mate in Formula 1 as a driver, yeah? He drove up to him, just went, you like that rear wing, do you? Smash. And his rear wing was gone.
That move reminded me of...
Malicious to the nth degree. It was like, watch what I can do with my wheels. Smack.
Flagrantly made two moves in the braking zone, yeah. And the stewards did not do a damn thing.
That just totally reminded me of Spa 95, when he did the same with Damon Hill going down the Kernel straight, and he blocked him constantly. And he got
Schumacher...
Did you notice about the stewards this weekend? When it came to some of the bigger issues, they seemed to, you know, shy away from it. But they were quite happy to hand out like two penalties to Petrov. Obviously, fair enough, he did exceed the time. He did speed, for example. So fair enough.
And Hülkenberg.
And Hülkenberg as well. So
I'm surprised Hülkenberg didn't get any more penalties, because he was a right clumsy git this weekend, driving into the back of Suttle, and then he did some pretty dodgy moves when he was trying to defend from one of the, I think it was Liuzzi again later on.
Do you know what Schumacher's defensive driving reminded me of? Especially with when he was ahead of the, not quite, when he was ahead of the two Force India drivers. Reminded me, it was shades of Hungary 2006, when De La Rosa was behind him as well. That's what it reminds me of.
That's basically off your track you go, De La Rosa. Yeah, I mean, the thing is, well, with Schumacher there, if you know, you look at you know, his reputation, and he does these kind of things. I mean, was Emerson Fittipaldi just going, well, it is Michael, he does these things, you know, in the sewage box? Because it is at least when he Massa is, you know, that's that you should have got a penalty for it. I mean, I know he's got no points, but that's still.
Two moves in the breaking zone is.
Yeah.
Say what I would have liked to have seen. What if Eddie Irvine had been the driver steward that weekend? That would have been very interesting. He probably would have just given penalties galore every time Schumacher turned the wheel.
Well, let's not talk about Eddie Irvine. Let's talk about what Paul just said very quickly there. You know, there was such a fuss made about Hamilton's weaving, and that wasn't in the braking zone. That was also in the street.
Yeah.
So why wasn't there such a big, you know?
Farrakis
made about Schumacher, and who
Hamilton
obviously
was
actually the
issued a warning or a reprimand.
Yeah, no, what? Yeah. Not even a warning for Schumacher.
I wonder if this will rumble on, and maybe we'll see some ramifications.
No, they would have punished him sooner or later. They can't do it now.
I don't mean punishment, but I see in terms of the
GPDA will have words about it at their next meeting.
I would love to see what Massa said to him after the race. You know. Because imagine Massa as this spoiled little kid, you know, that's basically been told he's not allowed to hang around with his best mate anymore. And I can imagine a teary-eyed Massa going, just up to Schumacher and going, why? You know, and that's basically, I mean, Massa is probably devastated now.
Do you know what was quite funny? They spoke to Rod Smedley afterwards, and they tried to get his opinion on Schumacher.
Yep.
And it was quite funny, he was quite coy because he couldn't really say much about Schumacher's past exploits, considering they all happened when he was driving for their team. So it was quite funny in that sense. I suppose some things never change. One man who had an interesting race, we've already mentioned him, was Tony Oliuzzi. Obviously, before the start of the race, he made a chassis change, before the start of the weekend, and he found a lot of form. He's very quick. Obviously, the design of the Montreal circuit helped Force India. And he was able to qualify a career best six. Obviously, he's had to start fifth when Webber had his gearbox change. But do you think that will be enough to keep his seat? Because he's had a torrid time, as old Tonio.
He
did had a good recovery drive as well, and dealt with Schumacher's dodginess pretty well, and got by him on the last lap, whilst the bloody director was too busy showing us Nicole.
Anyway, I mean, I think it was with sort of finished, you know, right next to him, didn't he? So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he's sort of still the better driver. You know, might not have qualified. It'd be quite out qualifying Liuzzi for whichever race apart from here, and then Liuzzi gets it done right here. Unless he does it for the rest of the season, I reckon Paul de Resta is going to be sat next to Sutil in 2011.
Paul
de Resta.
I meant Paul Douglas on the GP card, but...
Sorry, I thought you were questioning what I, you know...
Yes, understand.
Yes.
Liuzzi heads to Valencia, having never driven the circuit before, but he seems to be confident that it will suit Force India. Given the streets, he might have a chance. We do head to Valencia next, and obviously we'll talk about it in detail in a future GP cast, hopefully.
I'll put mine in. I do actually rate Liuzzi higher than Sutil.
Why?
Because I think Sutil has had chances before and has failed to capitalise on them.
But he's matured as a driver now.
I don't rate Liuzzi more by much. But...
Is it because Sutil has a gay run?
That doesn't help.
I'm pretty actually surprised he didn't crash in Canada because I was hoping to see his gay run again. last time.
But I will say I would like to see De Resta in a race seat.
It's looking likely.
That's because he's Scottish.
Yeah, it would be good to have another Scottish driver in.
Aye.
Considering that those two great Scottish drivers of the 1960s, and arguably the two of the greatest of all time, but arguably the two of the best.
Yeah, that's British. True. And there's two greatest drivers of all time, but if you get the real one, chin. That's all I want to say. Biggest chin in F1.
Yes.
Despite being born with a disability of having a massive head.
I didn't know Jay Leno was in Formula 1 now.
Yep. Despite being born with a disability of having a massive head, he still managed to win.
Just for men on his hair every weekend.
Several Grand Prix. David Coulthard, absolute legend.
It's a nice guy. And well done to DC for getting his MBE. Should mention that.
Yeah, for sure. And Jensen Button for getting another one. And being able to hold a conversation with the Queen. And not talk about corgis once, apparently. So you like corgis then? I'm a racing driver.
Maybe he'd probably think corgi. Maybe when she, if she'd mentioned corgis, he'd probably think he'd probably think they're them little toy cars.
Yeah.
That, or he's come to check a gas.
No, it's not corgi anymore. It's some new thing.
Yeah, they changed.
Why'd you ruin a joke?
Anyways, from all of us here, we'll be back with a preview for Valencia, hopefully. Thanks very much for listening to us all at the GP Cast. We do like to witter on every so often, but it's about good Formula One. So, from all of us here, goodbye.